My topic, as you've probably seen in your programs, is called Calm in the Chaos. And I had a moment this morning when I thought to myself, what am I doing? I feel like I need somebody to come talk to me about being calm. But it is an honor to be here with you guys this morning. I'm going to start my topic with a story. Mom, I don't have any clean underwear left in my drawer, hollered Johnny from the bathroom. Just a minute, I'll get you some. She found the basket of clean laundry that had been waiting for days to be folded, got Johnny his underwear, made a mental note to add more undies to the shopping list, and returned to the eggs frying on the stove. She sighed a little and thought to herself, I'm just so weary these days. I feel like my energy and zest for life has disappeared into thin air. As she and her family started the day, it felt like chaos bombarded her from every side. Sally was in tears because of the spelling test coming up. She has such a hard time in school. I need to find more time to help her study. Will she always struggle? I'm so worried she's going to grow up to be a needy adult if I don't do this right. She glanced at her planner and instantly felt a wave of overwhelm. Food to prepare for 4 events in the near future. Not a single evening home this week. And that annual OBGYN checkup. Oh, how she's dreading it. And speaking of appointments, she really needs to get one at the orthodontist for Mark. Where again is that tree that grows money? There's an out-of-state trip next week, and her girls all need dresses sewn badly. Her shoulders tighten a little. She wonders again how she will get everything done. She flies around the kitchen, packing lunches for the day, but her mind is running even faster than her feet. She'd made the mistake of reading a few news articles before bed last night. What's happening around the world is so heartbreaking, and the things going on in our own country is downright terrifying. She's bothered about the way her husband seemed to be misunderstanding her recently. Was it just her imagination, or did he seem a little cool when he kissed her goodbye this morning? At what point in marriage do we stop having communication struggles? And she's so worried about her sister, 2 states over, whose daughter is going through a health crisis. Please, God, let those tests come back negative. And God, about the situation at church, I can't see any good resolution to the conflicts, and I'm so afraid of what is to come. She managed to get the children out the door for school in the nick of time, but she's already deeply regretting the sarcastic way she spoke to her son. She sighed again. It's not even 9 o'clock in the morning, and she's already anxious, overstimulated, and stressed, and the sound of her toddler spatting in the next room makes her want to snap. Life in general feels like pure chaos, and she's holding on by the skin of her teeth. And that's the end of the story about this particular mom. I know you'll all be glad to hear that this is a fictitious story because, wow, we would all feel so sorry for her. She's a hot mess express, isn't she? But wait, it's not really a fictitious story. I see myself in this mom, and I'm going to guess you can identify with at least parts of that story, too. And really, that's only the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the chaos that life throws at us. Maybe you aren't this busy mom who is struggling to stay sane. Maybe your chaos is really, really hard, like a marriage that is broken or struggling, or a loved one who's suffering from cancer, or your adult child making heartbreakingly wrong choices. Maybe you're holding down a job and you've been blessed with a super difficult coworker, or maybe the authorities in your life are making decisions that feel so wrong and you feel trapped and helpless. Maybe it's financial challenges that leave you with a tight chest every time you go to pay for groceries. Whatever it is, we all face hard things sometimes. And then maybe on top of it all, our hormones decide that now's a great time to take a wild swing, and we just feel like the stress of life is gonna swallow us whole. We're not expecting roses and buttercups all the time or fun and games, but is it too much to ask that life is just not quite so hard and chaotic? So what do we think calm in a life of chaos even looks like? Is it a free evening in our schedule, and we decide to take a picnic to the lake. The weather is beautiful. Everyone's healthy. I'm in good harmony with my husband. The children are cheerful. You have a fulfilling but manageable workload in the week ahead, and you have time to work on projects you enjoy, and even time to slip out for coffee with a friend. I feel relaxed and happy just thinking about that. Sadly, though, I haven't found the formula to make this lovely kind of calm happen on demand yet. So I'm not here to teach you how to have the perfect lake evening in 5 easy steps. There's a different picture of calmness that's been forming in my mind. I'm starting to think that finding calm in the chaos looks less like getting myself into happy and serene circumstances and more like wielding a sword in battle. I'll come back to this idea of being in battle, but first, let's just talk a little bit about stress. I'm going to use the word stress.
And I'm gonna add a little stress here. They're working really hard to hear you back there, so keep your mouth to them, as much as possible.
Okay, cool.
And just kind of throw your voice. I'm still her mom. And where's the remote to take away the... Okay. Go for it, Abigail.
Thanks. I'm going to use the word stress, but I'm referring to any factor that keeps us from experiencing this calmness that we're all wishing for. Worry, anxiety, busyness, relational conflicts, difficult circumstances, you just fill in the blank with whatever it is that you're struggling with. Is stress just a part of being an adult in a broken world? And we need to accept that and do the best we can to cope. Sometimes that feels like the easiest option. But as I've seen what stress does to myself and those around me, I've thought to myself, there's got to be a better way to navigate life than to just become a tired, cranky, worn-out lady who sighs all the time and just thinks life is so hard. Doing a really quick Google search will show you a mind-blowing list of ways that stress affects our physical health. Headaches, insomnia, lightheadedness, aches and pain, fatigue, upset stomach, high blood pressure, hives, shortness of breath, and many more I didn't bother writing down. Science and the medical field are well aware of how stress affects our bodies. But our Father designed you and me, and He knows better than the doctors how stress affects our bodies, souls, and spirits. And guess what? He knew we were going to have the tendency to carry the weight of the broken world around us on our shoulders and in our hearts. And so He addressed it pretty clearly. I didn't even have to go digging into the depths of the Bible to find plenty of instruction on how to handle stress. These words are all so familiar to us. Be careful or worried for nothing. Take therefore no thought for the morrow shall take thought for the things of itself. Cast all your care upon Him. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart and lean not unto thine own understanding. Turns out, not only is stress not ideal for our health, it's an actual, factual command from our Father to let it go. And as we walk in obedience to Him, we should see a change in the way we respond to the small and big situations that make us want to freak out. I think often we do better at remembering and applying these verses when life knocks us so flat we can't possibly cope on our own. But more often, we're just trying so hard to be respectable and responsible adults, and we kind of forget that it's not all up to us to keep the world spinning. The first thing we know, we're all stressed out because everything is going wonky around us and we just can't fix it. It is a battle, for real. We have an enemy who is waging war against us as daughters of Christ. And he is so glad when we succumb to anxiety, overwhelm, worry, fear, and anger, because he knows no one can fight nearly as well when they're carrying those burdens. Let's just think about this a little bit. If protecting our peace were a literal battle, would we expect to win that battle just by showing up, gritting our teeth, and throwing our weight around? If we got pretty worked up inside, slammed a door or two, made a few snarky remarks, and then just cried about it all, would that do it? I mean, we can be a force to be reckoned with when we're upset. But if it were a real battle, and if that's all we had to offer, a trained soldier could take us out so quickly. Even though we're just a bunch of non-resistant ladies here, I think we're at least somewhat familiar with the process of someone going through boot camp before he's a real soldier. Boot camp takes a man and turns him into a soldier by giving him physical fitness, discipline, training technique, and weapons, which is surprisingly similar to what we need in our fight for calm. This whole battle analogy feels a little bit masculine to be using at a ladies' seminar, so just shift your mental images with me and picture ourselves as lovely, feminine, but strong queens who are equipping ourselves to protect our domain. And by domain, I mean our personal peace. I'm going to start back to front in the boot camp analogy and start by looking at some weapons we can use if we really want to contend for calm in our minds. First up is surrender. Yes, surrender. Kind of counterintuitive if it's a battle we're trying to win. Like a little toddler who found a knife and wants to run around the house with it because it makes him feel strong and powerful and safe and like he can do things and take care of himself, we often wrap our fists tightly around things that we would be so much better off giving to our Father, because he's really the one who can take care of us and keep us safe and take care of the things that need to be taken care of. But like the toddler, sometimes we cry and throw a little fit when our Father gently invites us to open our hands and give these things to him. The first and probably most obvious thing that we need to surrender is our ever-present need to be in control. You've already heard Mom talk about some of this morning, but I'm going to talk about it again for just a moment because it's a super common culprit for mental chaos. The urge to be in control is rooted so deeply inside of us. It's part of our spiritual DNA, and double whammy, it's part of our cultural DNA too. As I was doing a little research on stress, I came across something that confirmed what I'd been observing during my recent experience of living among the people of Kenya for 4 years. On the National Institutes of Health website, they write, and I quote, "In Eastern cultures, stress has been viewed as an absence of inner peace. On the other hand, in the Western culture has viewed stress as a loss of control." I've seen it to be true, and I'll tell you a little story that illustrates this pretty well. It's about a lady I knew in Kenya. Her name is Mama Rose. As far as I could tell, Mama Rose didn't have much wealth to her name, but her position as caretaker in a house, a neighboring house in our compound, gave her a pretty comfortable life. The couple who owned the house lived in another city and never came to the house, so she was able to use the kitchen to make beans and lentils and chapatis and chai and cake and mandazis, and she would take that food out to her roadside stand and sell it there. Her food was so good, and she seemed to have a booming business. About a year ago, we learned that the owner of the house was filing for bankruptcy, and the bank was going to sell the house. I wondered to myself what would happen to Mama Rose. And one day, I asked her where she will go when the house sells. She told me that her homeland was far away, and she'd been a widow for a long time, and that no, she did not have any place lined up to go to when the house sold the following week. She said, "Maybe I will sleep on the street." I said, "Aye, so you are worried." And she laughed as if I'd said something silly and said, "No, I am not worried. I will just leave it to God." Let's be honest. Most of us would describe that response, at least in the quiet of our heads, as having our head in the sand. Maybe even a tad irresponsible. And we certainly wouldn't be laughing if we thought there was a possibility we were going to be homeless in a week's time. But you know what? The sale of that house fell through. And as days stretched into months, and Mama Rose was still in the house and growing her business, I thought to myself, God really did take care of that for her. The house did eventually sell. But when the time came, Mama Rose found another place to live, and she only had to move her little restaurant a few hundred yards up the road. I'm not suggesting that we just sit back, relax, and don't take any responsibility when there's something that needs to be done. But what if the next time we're all tied up in knots about something that just isn't working out, we take a little bit more of the "I will just leave it to God" approach instead of the "How can I make this situation turn out right" one. Another thing we need to surrender is our fears. We have so many fears, and fear always brings stress. We fear what people will think of us. We fear how our children will turn out. We fear for our health. We fear that our husbands won't think we're enough. We fear what's happening in our country around us. There's no calmness in fear. 2 Timothy 1, verse 7 says this, "For God hath not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and love and a sound mind." When we open our tightly clenched fists and surrender those fears to our Father, He gives us a sound mind in return. We also need to surrender our rights/expectations. We tend to think we have some pretty basic rights. God created us to desire and need certain things. So isn't it right if those things are fulfilled? And when they're not fulfilled, we tend to fret and fume and get tied up in knots. We expect to be treated with love and respect. We're queens, after all. Expect to be understood and appreciated by our husbands, children, coworkers, the people around us. We feel a right to get a decent amount of sleep and to have a reasonably clean house. We feel a right to have good health and to be independent, a right to have a say-so in anything that affects me or my family. I think, deep down, we all know that God never promises these things. And it's just in the muddle of dealing with our own selfish little self that we get confused and think that these things are things that we're owed. So, let's correct our thinking and give it all to Jesus. When we've given our expectations to the Lord, we don't have them anymore. And if we don't have them, we won't be disappointed if they aren't met. And if we're not disappointed, we won't get sad and mad and upset. See? Sounds easy. It's not. It's worth it, though. We need to surrender our time. As responsible ladies who love to run our families and schedules efficiently, we buy a good planner and write things down, fitting together all the pieces of our busy schedule. It's good. We need order and structure in our lives, and our families thrive when mom keeps a good schedule. But what happens when life starts handing out situations where we don't get to choose how we spend our time? What is our response when the planner is pretty much as full as it can get, and the obligations and needs and responsibilities just keep coming? Or what if sickness takes us out and we're suddenly days, weeks, or months behind schedule on what we'd planned to accomplish? This one hits really close to home for me. Living in Kenya as a missionary pastor and unit leader's wife, I had lots of things to do, things that affected others if I didn't get them done. Kind of important things, I thought. I enjoyed the work and the lifestyle and the fulfillment, even if it was busy and a little overwhelming sometimes. Then God gave me a little tiny human, and we named him Hudson. Hudson was so cute, and we were so happy to have him. My previous baby had been a really happy, contented baby, so I kind of assumed I had the whole momming thing figured out. And I thought I would just strap Hudson in the baby carrier and we'd be off to the races, getting stuff done and making a difference in the world like a good missionary should. You do know where this is going, don't you? We struggled through the first few weeks with nursing challenges and lots of tummy aches. This is normal, I thought. It'll get better soon and we'll be through it. But days turned into weeks and weeks into months, and Hudson still consumed so much of my time. During the night, I would walk circles around the house, and during the day, I spent hours on the swing or watching the chickens or just trotting around our little yard with a baby on my hip. Hours that I dearly needed to stay caught up with life around me. My housework and my responsibilities around the compound just simply weren't getting the attention they needed. And to be honest, it made me a little miserable, definitely stressed. I wondered why my father thought it was a good idea to give me such a high-maintenance little dude when he'd already entrusted so many other responsibilities into my care. It turns out that saying, "God will never give you more than you can handle," isn't true. There just really was no way I could get everything done that I thought I needed to get done in the moments I had when the baby took shortish naps or my husband was around to help. It would be nice if I could tie up this little story with a bow and say that when I learned to surrender my time to God, he magically made the baby be happy and contented and multiplied the hours in my day and also made the work disappear. But that's not what happened at all. But the Lord did slowly do a work in my weary heart. And I came to understand just a little better that what he really, really wants for me is to be completely surrendered to him. He wants me to give him my time and my energy and my goals and my responsibilities. He wants that even more than he wanted me to do all those good and important things I wanted to be doing for him. He wants me to rest and be calm in the knowledge that he's got it under control. We also need to surrender our failures. You'd think our sins and our failures would be one thing we wouldn't be looking to hang on to, right? It's not like we want to put them out on display for everyone to see. But hiding them deep inside is not the same thing as letting them go. When we mess up and do or say things we regret, it's so easy to just keep them inside and let them fester. We run a commentary in our heads that sounds like this: I know God is despairing with me. I'm just not good enough, and I've got to figure out how to fix me. When we surrender our failures to Christ and accept that he truly has removed them as far as the east is from the west, it clears a bunch of cobwebs out of our hearts and allows his peace to become our identity instead of the identity of broken and ashamed we are so often tempted to carry with us. There are many things that can rob us of our peace, but the last one I'm going to touch on today is our reputation. That thing of worrying what people think about us. If anything can cause us to be rumpled in spirit, as Anne of Green Gables would say, having our reputation be attacked or misunderstood will do it. Many times, it just comes from misunderstandings. Sometimes it comes from spite, but regardless, our responses are usually the same. We fret and stew and connive for justice. We lose sleep and just go to pieces. If we truly belong to Christ, isn't our reputation his too? It's so much easier said than done, but we need to surrender our reputation to him. Sometimes it's issues like your child is being a handful at school and you're sure the teachers think you're a lousy mom, or you had to stick out your neck a little to stand strong on convictions and you wonder if your friends are going to lump you into the weird category. Give those concerns to Jesus, friends. Your reputation is safe with him. If you find yourself frazzled, stressed, and struggling to surrender in any of these areas, or ones I haven't mentioned, ask yourself, what is the very worst thing that will happen if I let go of this? Sometimes that question can shift our perspective enough to help us realize that although we might face some discomfort or frustration or embarrassment, it won't actually be the end of the world if it turns out differently than we would choose. When our perspective clears, we can see that it would be so much worse to drag ourselves and those around us into the struggle of trying to make everything work out right. It would be worse to do that than to just let it go. Now, sometimes the answer to that question is different. And the very worst that could happen is so hard you can hardly even think of it. But the next question to ask is my father big enough, strong enough, does he care enough about me to handle even that? I'm thinking of surrender as our first line of defense. It's kind of like a shield that protects us. Satan can't bring us down by firing these things against us if we just surrender them all back to Jesus, see? But if you really want to gain ground in the battle for calm, use the weapon of gratitude. It's like picking up a sword and sending the enemy into retreat mode. I mentioned Philippians 4, verse 6 earlier. It tells us in very plain words, be careful for nothing. It goes on, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. And then it tells us what happens if we do that. The peace of God, which passeth all understanding, shall keep your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. That's it. That's exactly what we're longing for. When I read this passage, I see a picture of us opening our hands and letting go of our worries, stress, and anxiety. We hand them to our Father and thank Him that He's big enough to handle them. He takes His strong, all-powerful hands and wraps our literal, physical hearts and minds in His peace. And He keeps them, protects them, shelters them. We use the term losing our minds pretty loosely, but there have been times when I've been a little bit worried that it would become my reality. When life was just so busy and the baby was fussy and I hadn't slept well in months and there were challenging relationships to navigate and learning struggles for my son and there was death and grief and exhausting international travel and more. It's a comfort to know that when we are obedient to give thanks, our Father has promised to keep our minds. And one thing's for sure, we're not going to lose our minds if He's keeping them. We've all had experiences where we just feel full up with gratefulness. The Lord truly does great and wonderful things, and we feel so grateful. But right now, I'm talking about the times we're stressed and feeling a ton of emotions, but gratefulness isn't one of them. I recently listened to a podcast where a pastor was explaining how healing it can be for Christians to read the Bible. And the host asked, "What if I read the Bible, but I don't feel anything? I don't feel specific inspiration or excitement." And the pastor said, those are the times when it is doing a work in your heart because you're doing it out of obedience and faith, not because of what you feel. And that's exactly how it is when we give thanks. When we can't feel, but we give thanks, that's when God does the deep work in our hearts and grants us the peace that passes understanding. In other words, peace that doesn't even makes sense in the circumstances we're in. In the words of my mother, the antidote to stress and overwhelm is doggedly counting your blessings. When you feel like life is threatening to take you under, just start somewhere. Thank God for something. It might have to be thanking Him that you know your sense of smell is still working when you finally tackle that disgusting pile of laundry. But thank Him. My mother-in-law, who was always Mama Sue to me, was a woman who modeled peace and calmness well. In February of this year, she went to be with Jesus after a really difficult struggle with cancer. A few weeks ago, I was helping my father-in-law go through some cabinets and closets. Thanks to the many flowers we were given over the time of the funeral, the tall cabinet in the laundry room was full and overflowing with vases. And as I sorted through them, I found a little crock with a lid on it, and I opened it. And there inside were lots of little white cards with Mama Sue's handwriting on them. I felt like I had found a treasure. The top card said, 2017 blessings. And on each one, she or my father-in-law had written something they were thankful for. There were some bigger things in there, but most of them were just little, ordinary, everyday things. The kind of things that don't strike us as, oh, that's a blessing. My favorite one was dated January 28, 2017, and it said, "Hubby cleaned up his office. Wonderful." I don't know what inspired Mama Sue to start writing things down and sticking them in a jar, but I love that she did that. It wasn't a big splashy post on social media saying how grateful they were for something wonderful. It was just her and my father-in-law quietly giving thanks to their Lord. Be like my Mama Sue. If life is stressing you out and you don't feel like you have 101 blessings to be thankful for, look for the unusual and mostly unnoticed blessings and thank God sincerely for that thing. As a side note to gratefulness, I want to put in a little plug for using humor. Humor is a fantastic little tool for diffusing tension in our minds and our bodies. We've all heard the saying, if we don't laugh, we'll cry. And while it might be a little cliche, I think it's true. Laughing and crying are both outlets for all the emotions that tumble around inside of us. Sometimes we definitely do feel better after a good cry, but often laughing will regulate those old emotions while at the same time shifting our perspective towards positivity. Proverbs 17:22 backs me up on this. A merry heart doeth good like a medicine. Medicines and supplements for our mental health are super common these days, but they're also pretty expensive. So if you don't have extra cash lying around right now, but you feel like you need a little something for support up there, just try laughing uproariously for about 5 minutes every day and see what happens. I love being around people that make me laugh, and I like to make people laugh too. If you know my mom, my dad, or my aunt Pat Roy, you might not be surprised by that. I just enjoy humor. After coming through a particularly stretching season of pregnancy sickness and postpartum, I realized I was starting to laugh again, and it felt good. It made me realize that I was healing. And after I noticed that, I started consciously looking for humor in life. And although my family didn't know it, I kind of made a little goal to try to make them laugh at least once a day. It didn't always happen, but I guess my children's sense of humor just isn't fully developed yet because I got more eye rolling from them than laughing. But I was more successful with my husband. And it was a win-win for both of us. It was just a little moment of de-stressing together. Plus, my ego got a little boost if he thought I was funny. I kind of forgot about that little habit I had for a while. But I forgot about it until I was preparing for this topic. But I'm inspired to start again because I was reminded how I noticed how distinctly the vibes in our house were more relaxed and less stressed when I, as the mom, was just taking advantage of life and picking out something that was funny and noticing it. So those are some basic weapons that, if we put them to good use, will get us pretty far in our quest for calm. we've thoroughly covered letting go of things we can't control. Let's shift gears and talk about something we can and really need to take control of. Our thoughts. Think of it this way. It seems like it could solve a lot of problems and take care of a lot of stress if we would just get to choose which people and circumstances we get to keep in our life. But we don't. For the most part, we can't do anything about that. But that's not the way it is with our thoughts. We get to choose which thoughts we accept and which thoughts we reject. And we get to be ruthless about it. A few years ago, my dad read a book that got him thinking about the power of our thoughts. And he works with a lot of young people at Faith Mission Home, and he would engage them in conversation by just going up to them and asking them, "Have you thought about what you're thinking about?" Most of the time, we don't really do that. We don't stop to think about what's going on up here. We just think and think and think. As ladies, sometimes it seems like we never stop thinking. We're actually so good at thinking. The problem comes when our thoughts are thoughts of worry and anxiety and overwhelm and anger. Those thoughts translate to stress. Just a week or so ago, my brother Jerry posted a link on our family chat to a talk that was called How to Never Get Angry or Bothered by Anyone by some guy in the UK whose social media name is Jamie Handel. Social media handle is Jamie Social. I briefly considered just playing the talk for you and copping out of my topic altogether, but I decided to stick with the original plan. But I was really inspired, and I'm going to share a little bit of what I learned with you all. He introduced me to the 90-second rule. When something happens that upsets you, your body floods with stress hormones. That's normal. Things do happen that upset us. It's a normal part of life. But did you know that your body naturally flushes those stress hormones out of your system in 90 seconds? That's a minute and a half. What happens next is up to you, and it can make the difference between having one bad or stressful moment and a bad or stressed out outlook on life in general. Let's use an example. You're having a conversation with a coworker or maybe a fellow food committee member or whoever it might be. Don't worry, I'm not on the food committee, so I'm not pointing any fingers. It might even be somebody in your own household. Your friend makes a comment that really upsets you. You've struggled a little bit in the past with getting along, but this comment was downright mean and it hurt. You instantly feel all the emotions, anger, defensiveness, sadness, insecurity, and some things you probably can't even name. But then that moment is over too. But then that moment is over, and those emotions will be over too, unless you decide to keep feeding them. We replay the moment in our minds, and the emotions all come back. We think to ourselves, "She knew she was hurting me. That was so cruel. How does she even claim to have the love of God? I wish I could have thought of this good comeback to help her see that maybe I'm not actually the dumb one. And so on and so forth. You know how it happens. We've all been there, done that. It's so easy to think those thoughts. They just come. We don't even have to manufacture them. They just come quickly and pile in one on top of the other. But every single time we choose to think one of those thoughts, we bring on another surge of the stress hormones. There's a point between the trigger, or the moment when the upsetting thing happens, and your response to that thing. Jamie Social calls it the choice point. At that little moment, you get to choose what your response will be. He says, and I'm quoting, "In the point between the trigger and your response lies your freedom." Think about that for a minute. In that little moment, you're choosing to either keep the cycle of negative emotions and stress hormones rolling, or you're going to choose freedom from that stress and let it go. But here's the thing. It's pretty easy for me to stand up here and say that. But we all know it's not actually that easy to do it. It takes some real grit and discipline, determination. This is where the discipline part comes in. We have a friend who used to be in the Army, and boy, does that man have discipline. He's disciplined in his eating habits, and he's very active physically. He and his wife hiked the Appalachian Trail at 60 years old, and if that doesn't take discipline, I don't know what does. You can tell just by the way he walks that his body listens to him and not the other way around. I think you'll probably know what I mean when I say he handles himself like an army man. The army knows that they aren't likely to be victorious if their soldiers are wishy-washy men who can't control themselves. So they teach them discipline. We aren't likely to be victorious either if we don't get disciplined about taking control of the thoughts that prance through our heads. It might be helpful to think of your thoughts as actual people who are coming into your life. Pretend each thought is a person who is either going to make your life better and help you, or it's someone who's going to drag you down, wear you out, and make you miserable. Maybe that sounds a little silly, but somehow it puts it into perspective for me. Because would we invite people into our life if we knew they were going to have a really negative effect on us? Would we say to them, "Come on in. Oh, don't go yet. Stay a while. Actually, would you like to just move in with me? I have a spare bedroom." I'm not here to say that unhealthy thoughts won't find their way in, but we do have the option of showing them the door to leave again real quick. So, if you find yourself stressed out and chafing under the people and circumstances God has placed in your life, comfort yourself with the knowledge that while you can't do anything about those, you are in full control of your thoughts. And while we know that the people and circumstances around us do affect us, I would like to gently suggest that your thoughts might be more of a culprit for your stress levels than you're giving them credit for. There's another thing that happens sometimes. We talk to ourselves and tell ourselves things. During that intense season of life that I referred to earlier, where I was juggling a needy baby and lots of responsibilities, I found myself going through my days chanting to myself, "I'm so overwhelmed, I'm so overwhelmed, I'm so overwhelmed." I don't know what made me start doing that, but one day I suddenly realized what I was doing and how it was affecting me. I don't have a scientific explanation for this, but I'm pretty sure it's not just my imagination, that the things we tell ourselves often become our reality. I think chanting things to ourselves during intense times in our lives can be really helpful, as long as they're the right kinds of things, instead of, "I'm overwhelmed," or, "This is just so hard." Try, "His grace is sufficient. His grace is sufficient. His grace is sufficient." Or, "All things work together for good to them that love God." Or, "I can do all things through Christ." Just like negative thoughts can become our reality, God's promises become our reality too. When we embrace them, meditate on them, write them deep on our hearts. Back to Mr. Jamie Social and the choice point, which, remember, is that tiny little point between something that triggers us and our response to the trigger. When we become aware of our choice point and take control of what happens in the choice point, we stop being an emotional pinball bouncing off circumstances, and we start being the player controlling the game. Obviously, I was fascinated and inspired by what Jamie Social had to say, but the absolute authority on taking control of our thoughts is found in the next verse of the portion in Philippians 4. Verse 8 says, "Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things." That is the ultimate filter. And if we were committed to keeping the things that come into our minds in line with that list, I'm convinced there would be fewer stressed out people around. If you were to take inventory of the things that are stressing you out, I don't think any of them would be in that passage, you know? Learning to discipline our thoughts and choose responses of surrender and gratitude is not something we become good at overnight. It's not something that comes naturally. It's something we need to train ourselves. When we returned to the U.S., a few months ago, we moved back into the same little house we'd rented before we left for Kenya. I was surprised at how uncomfortable and unfamiliar I felt in the house, especially the kitchen. You'd think that after being a housewife for 12 years and having lived in 4 different houses, I would be a pro at settling into a new space. But everything just felt unfamiliar, and it took me long to do anything. I couldn't remember where my things were, and I couldn't even remember which dishes I had. If I needed a certain dish, I'd wonder, was that a Kenya dish or is this an America dish? It honestly drove me a little bit crazy, and I found myself choosing to escape by packing up the kids and saying, "Let's go to Grammy's house." We were all happy over there, and she does make good food. After a bit, I realized that it wasn't gonna start feeling right at my house until I just stayed at home and did the things in my own kitchen. I needed to go through the motions of cooking and cleaning and tidying before I could find good rhythms and my brain adjusted to where everything was. Now, 2 months in, I feel much more at home, and I can zip around my kitchen pretty fast. I can grab a knife and a cutting board and a bowl to put the meat in without stopping to think about it. It's a lot like that when it comes to keeping a peaceful mind. It takes practice and it takes time. Think of it as the part of boot camp where you, where they exercise to become physically fit. We have to choose surrender and be grateful and take control of our thoughts over and over and over again to strengthen those responses. And for a while, it's going to be hard, and we might not even feel that great while we're doing it, because muscles that aren't used to being used hurt when they get stretched. But if we're consistent in exercising those muscles or responses, and we allow the Holy Spirit to do his work in our hearts, we'll find that those healthy responses to stress become a little more familiar and easy to use. Be intentional about fighting the small battles. Don't allow yourself to fret and be anxious about the seemingly small or insignificant things in life. Things like getting all worked up because it's so hard to herd your family out the door on a Sunday morning, looking respectable and hopefully being on time for church. Don't ask me why I use that example, though. If you practice these things in normal everyday life, you'll be better equipped to handle the stress when life throws big old curveballs at you. But keep in mind that it's also like exercise in the way that we can't just get good and fit and then quit exercising and expect our muscles to stay toned. Just like my kitchen felt so unfamiliar after not using it for 4 years, if we don't exercise healthy responses to stress, those responses will stop coming easily. It's a choice we're going to need to make for the rest of our lives. And to wrap this up, I just want to get really practical for a minute. We are beautifully designed as body, soul, and spirit. And we're misguided if we think we can separate them and work on the one but not pay attention to the other. Stress isn't just a mind thing or a spirit thing. Sometimes our bodies betray us and make it really hard to find that calm that we so much want. There are a few fairly easy and practical things I've found helpful during times of intensity to keep the stress levels down a little. Pay attention to your diet, eat enough protein, cut back on the sugar. Hunger is a real thing, and we can all handle life so much better if we're fueled with wholesome food. If you're really struggling with brain fog and anxiety, you might need some extra help. Don't ignore it, and don't be afraid to try supplements or doctoring. My best advice for this is to pray and ask the Holy Spirit for specific guidance, because we are absolutely bombarded these days with offers of wonderful supplements and health plans, and it's honestly just bewildering sometimes to know where we should turn. But ask the Lord. He cares, and he has ways of guiding us to what we need. Thirdly, get out and walk. Walking pumps oxygen to our brains, and goodness knows we need that. Exercising of any type is super helpful in regulating your body and helping you to cope with stress. Take deep breaths. This is something that is so simple but pretty effective, but rarely used. Just stop sometimes when you're worked up and just take a bunch of deep breaths in through your nose, out through your mouth. When we do this, the sound mimics the Hebrew name of God. I love that thought. It's not original with me, but when I heard that, it resonated with me. When we do that, the thing that keeps us alive physically is breathing the name of God into our lungs and our bodies. And finally, dress for the results you want. Don't underestimate the effect your appearance can have on you. My husband served as principal of the youth Bible school for our churches in Kenya for a few years, and he noticed that the students responded with more respect and obedience when he dressed up or looked smart, as they say, versus wearing something casual. It really works the same for our mental state too. If you're struggling to stay calm in the chaos of life, maybe that isn't the day to wear your old faded stretch dress and some threadbare flip-flops. Put on something nice, take time to wash the greasy hair, and wear some good shoes to signal to your hormones and your emotions, and your children if you have them, that you are in control and you expect obedience and respect out of them. My prayer is that you've been inspired to fight this good fight. Let's straighten those queenly tiaras, open our clenched hands, and claim victory in the name of our Father. There's a song that I came across a while ago that caught my attention because it fits so well with what I was thinking about for this topic. But as I navigated the last few months of our time in Kenya, it became an anchor for me. I listened to it so many times, and I asked Mom and the girls if they would help me sing it this morning, and they agreed. So we'll sing that for you now.
Maybe you're broken and you've been torn apart. Maybe your hope is gone and you're lost in the dark. You're caught up in the storms of life and you've lost your way. I'm here to tell you now, child, don't lose faith. Just bring every burden, bring every bruise, bring every problem you wish you could lose. Bring it all, give it to Jesus. Bring all your chaos, bring all your stress, bring all the words you wish could be unsaid. Bring it all, give it to Jesus. When you need freedom for yourself, He'll set you free. For the lonely, for the ashamed, He says, come unto me. I'm telling you, this is not the end. Your darkest fears are every burden, bring every bruise, bring every problem you wish you could lose. Bring it all, give it to Jesus. Bring all your chaos, bring all your stress, bring all the words you wish could be unsaid. Bring it all, give it to Jesus. So don't keep it inside, don't say it's all right. He has your answer, He's waiting for you. So bring every burden, bring every bruise, bring every problem you wish you could lose. Bring it all, give it to Jesus. Bring all your chaos, bring all your stress, bring all the words you wish could be unsaid. Bring it.